Podcast. My name is Matthew Wordnam and I'm a physiotherapist working alongside the Trail team here in Melbourne. On this week's episode of the podcast, postdoctoral researcher and Trail team member Dr. Andrea Bruder speaks with Dr. Kelly Angel. Dr. Kelly Angel is an ultra trail runner, occupational therapist, and has recently become a new mum. Kelly has won the Australian long course trail event on three separate occasions. In addition to her success on a national level, Kelly has represented Australia on the world stage and has competed in the infamous Ultra Trail du Mont Blanc in France. So, without further delay, here is this week's episode with Kelly and Andrea.
Thanks for joining us on the podcast today, Kelly. You're one of our national ultra runner champions, having competed nationally and internationally. So my first question to you is, how did you first get into running?
Hi, thanks for having me, Andrea. So I first got into running a bit later in the game. I did lots of team sports as a kid, netball and basketball in particular, and I never really was a runner at school or anything, but my cousin was doing Run for the Kids as a bit of publicity for something he was doing, and asked me to come along. So I attempted to do the 14 or 15 kilometre run, whatever it was at that point, with him, and really loved it. And on the back of not much training, so I managed to do the distance and was a bit hooked from there.
So for those of us that are starting running later in life, there's hope for us yet.
That's right.
So can you tell us a little bit about your path from road running to ultra marathon running and hitting the trails?
Yeah, so I guess from there I decided that if I could run 15K, I could probably run a half marathon. So I signed up, I think, for Run Melbourne, and I joined Running in the Burbs, which was the designated club for leading up to that event. And so, yeah, I got immersed in the community a bit more, I guess, with that stuff. Ran the half marathon, then just chipped away, ran a couple of marathons from there. And I think my first trail event was Two Bays. The 28K, it runs from Dramana to Cape Shank, and it was just such a fun event. Everyone was so friendly. It was a very different vibe to road running, and I really enjoyed it. And so some friends from Running in the Burbs then convinced me to do Oxfam Trail Walker with them, which is a 100K walk for most people. We decided to walk jog it, and we did Maroondah Dam, the 50K, as a team leading up to Oxfam. And again, I just found that it came pretty naturally to me, and I just really loved being out on the trails. And yeah, we did Oxfam, and then I started competing a little bit more on the trail circuit.
So for those early half marathons and marathons, how did you put together your training program?
Yeah, so I guess I just ran with Running in the Burbs, and they sort of they drove what we were doing for each week. And at that time, I probably only ran two or three times a week. I couldn't understand why anyone would actually want to run more than that. but I was, you know, I was probably playing netball and basketball at the time as well, and doing some other things. So yeah, I managed, and I think I probably managed to run my first marathon running only three times a week too. But it helped to have a base level of fitness, and it helped to have other people to run with and you know, tick off those long runs and know that you could make the distance. And yeah.
So for some of our listeners who haven't yet attempted a marathon but have been thinking about it, are you suggesting that maybe they can actually do that 3 days a week of training?
Look, it is possible. I don't necessarily recommend that as a coach these days, but it is possible. It depends. You know, there's so many factors that it depends on. It depends on your running age, you know, how long have you been running for, what other sports and fitness activities have you been doing, you know, what is your base level of fitness. Anything is possible, but it's, you know, then considering injury and the injury risk. And the more, well, I guess there's a point of no return, but the, you know, if you're running a bit more regularly, you're more likely, less likely to get injured and more likely to be able to achieve your goals. Mm-hmm. But yes, I think it's good to gradually build your way up through the distances. A marathon, you know, you shouldn't really be attempting that if you've literally only just started running. It should be a couple of years down the track.
Yeah. Great. Thanks for that. I'd like to know, you've competed, I mean, even though you've taken up running at a later time in life, you've ran a lot of very interesting, incredible races. What's your most memorable race out of all of them?
There's a lot of memorable races for me, but probably the main one is UTMB, so the Ultra Trail de Mont Blanc. It's a 170-kilometre race, so 100 miles plus, that circumnavigates Mont Blanc, and you run through France, Italy and Switzerland. And there's 10,000 metres of climbing. It's probably one of the biggest ultras in the world. So there's 2,500 people running the 100-mile race. And, yeah, for me, that was my first 100-mile event. It was a pretty spectacular place to do it. And I really had no idea what to expect of my body. I'd only ever run for maybe 15 hours before. So I went into this knowing that it would probably be at least double that. And I just had the race of my life. We got stuck in all sorts of elements. I think it was -3 degrees up on some of the high peaks, and I'd never been so cold in my life. But I managed to push through, and I came through for fifth place, which was pretty awesome.
Congratulations. It's just so impressive, and I think for lots of us, listeners included, we just don't know how we could bring yourself to do something like that. How did you manage getting through in those really tough conditions?
Yeah, it was really hard. I guess that race in particular starts at night time, so it starts at 6 p.m. And so you go straight into the cold night. So it was a matter of, I guess, making sure that I dressed appropriately. At one of the first aid stations, I changed to get out of my sweaty clothes, knowing that I'd be going into the colder night, and then having layers available. But my hands were so cold that I couldn't actually do anything myself. So I'd often have to stop and find people to help me get dressed, because my hands were useless. And you also find that as you change altitude, the temperature changes a lot as well. So you're constantly, you know, putting your jumper on, taking it off, putting more gloves on, taking them off. And I think I had 3 layers of gloves at one point to try and keep my hands warm. But, you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere and you kind of just don't have an option but to push through. Otherwise, you're just going to get cold and have to be rescued somehow in hours to come. So you just keep pushing forward.
So to support yourself during those runs, are you carrying a lot of equipment yourself?
Yes, you are. Yeah, particularly in that one. Yeah, you've got to, there's a fairly large list of mandatory gear that you have to carry. I guess in case of the worst case scenario, if you do get injured on one of those high passes, you need to be able to survive. So, lots of warm clothes, lots of water, nutrition. You know, you might have an emergency, like bivy bag, things like that can keep you safe.
So, I mean, that memorable race for you is long in terms of distance as well as significant altitude and elevation. How do you train for something like that? You know, how far out do you have to actually start planning and preparing yourself?
Yeah, so I guess with ultra marathon training, I don't look at it as training for a particular event. It's definitely an accumulation of many years of training, and you know, every event teaches you something that you will take into the next event. And you know, the more miles on your legs are going to help you in your future races as well. It is very hard training for these sort of races in Australia. You generally will know that you're going to be doing this race at least a year in advance. So it's planning different races that might help you work towards that. I think here, being in Melbourne, I hate training through winter, through the rain and the cold, but it probably really helped me for that particular race, because all the Europeans were coming out of it and Americans were coming out of their summer, whereas we were coming out of winter. So I had at least trained in the rain and the cold and for those sort of elements. Not that extreme, but, at least similar.
And what about elevation? Because, I mean, depending on where you live in Melbourne and in Victoria, you may or may not have access to that amount of elevation.
Yeah, that's right. So I guess, you know, we try and take some weekends away to go and find some hillier places. maybe down in Bright or somewhere in the Alpine region. But otherwise, day to day, I'm lucky that I live at the base of the Dandenongs. So it's just finding the steepest hills you can find. Because, yeah, with these European races in particular, they're not really all running. There's a lot of hiking involved. So you need to train for that as well.
So during that preparation, do you actually do hiking or do you actually try and push yourself and run up the hills?
No, I definitely will train for hiking as well. I think it's really important. Specificity for me is really important. And so, you know, you can run all you like in training, but if you get to a race and the hills are combined with the distance that you're running, you do get to a point where you can't physically run everything. So you need to have strong legs. You need to know, your body needs to know how to hike as well.
So how do you get your legs strong?
Well, yep, lots of hiking up and down Glasgow, which is a nice rocky climb in the Dandenongs that's fairly close by for us. But sometimes I hike with a weight vest, so usually sort of around 10%, 10 to 20% of your body weight. And at the moment, now I'm training with baby, so he's my weight vest now, that helps. Yeah, and then going to the gym. It's important to do some strength work as well. It's really easy for that to be the first thing to drop off, but I think as I get older, I'm realizing that it's more important to train smarter rather than harder. And, strength work is really important for the type of racing that I do.
So what would your strength program look like?
So, look, I will try and get to the gym twice a week where possible. For about 10 years, I was a body pump instructor, and that was the majority of my strength training most of the time. I haven't got back to that since baby just yet, but otherwise it'll just be going and doing some lots of free weights and body weight stuff. It doesn't need to be really heavy, but doing a lot of things focused on your glutes mostly. And then hiking is important strength work, and now I'm doing a little bit of reformer Pilates as well, which I think has been really good to just hone in on some of those stabilizing muscles that you don't necessarily think about as much.
And is that a new addition to your training program, the clinical Pilates?
Yeah, yep, yeah, yep. If I had more time, I'd do a whole heap of other things, but you've got to prioritize.
Absolutely, and especially because you are a new mum. So congratulations on the arrival of little Atticus last year. He's incredibly cute, but I'd like to find out a little bit more about how you actually adjusted your training program during your pregnancy, how that might have changed over the trimesters, and certainly how long it took you to get back into it.
Yeah, so look, it was definitely a journey. When I first found out I was pregnant, I spoke to my GP for some advice, and he was a bit old school, and he just said, oh, look, I'm happy for you to do, a few short runs a week. I said, define short, because I've literally just come off the back of an 80K training weekend up some hills in Apollo Bay. And, our understanding of that didn't really match. And so I did a bit of research, and I found an obstetrician who was a runner herself and had done a bit of research into exercising during pregnancy. And so I felt like we were a bit more on the same page, and she was happy for me to keep training and just listening to my body, I guess. I tried to, chat to other elite athletes or just listen to podcasts or things that other people had done. It gave me a bit of an idea, because you really have no idea. And, the old way of thinking is that, you're not meant to do a lot. But I think more and more now people are realising that it's really important to stay active during your pregnancy. So, yeah, look, I continued to train. I just didn't train as hard, and I gradually reduced volume over time and started doing a lot more hiking, did a lot of bike riding. So it coincided with COVID for me. So there are a lot of things that weren't available. I would have loved to have done more pool sessions and things, but the pools just weren't open, so that was not an option at all. I was lucky enough to get a bike trainer early on in my pregnancy, and later on they were sold out everywhere. You couldn't buy one anywhere because of COVID. But that was a great option, because it was a lot less load bearing, and it gave me an option to train at home with some of my athletes as well on Zwift. And then doing a lot of hiking. Yeah, so just still getting my fix of being out on the mountain and in nature, but in a slower, less in a slower way that was less impact.
Yeah. So was there much advice provided to you about intensity, or, you know, and watching your heart rate during exercise?
Yeah, you read a lot about that, but then, you know, the obstetrician was not overly concerned about that. I think it was just listening to my body myself, and, you know, being an athlete, you're pretty in tune with you know, how things feel. And it was just a bit of intuition, I guess, of what was safe and what was not too. Because I think the more you get your heart rate up, your body's starting to not feel right from a mechanical perspective anyway, as you're starting to put on some baby weight. So I think that all came hand in hand.
So during the period that you sort of were pregnant, was there anything there that you learnt through that process that you can share with women who are thinking about getting pregnant or possibly are pregnant around exercise and running?
Yeah, look, I think the main thing is that, you know, it can be a bit of a struggle initially because you identify as being an athlete, and, you know, it's hard to shift that mental focus of what's happening, you know, all the changes that are happening in your body. But I think it's important to stay active, but just don't put too much pressure on yourself to, you know, to still do what you used to be able to do. You can't compare your times, and you can't, you know, there's lots of things that are different. So it's just being easy on yourself, and also finding other ways to get involved in the community. So I sort of stopped racing. Also, again, COVID came, so there weren't many races, but I just shifted my focus. So I put my hand up to volunteer at a few races, being a sweep. So I knew that I could still be involved and be out on course, but there was no pressure to race hard and to compete and try and do something that wasn't possible or wasn't going to satisfy me in that way.
And you're obviously back running, and congratulations on your on winning the Sky Sprint at the Buffalo Stampede the week after Easter. Very impressive again, postpartum 6 months. How have you returned to your running? What does that look like?
Yeah, so again, I think there's a lot of general pressure from the wider world and the, you know, social media to get back to it. But I wanted to make sure that I did it in a safe way and that it wasn't going to put undue pressure on my body to then not be able to run in the future. So again, I did a bit of research and found the return to running postnatal guidelines that were developed, I think, in 2017. And they were pretty restrictive for, I guess, you know, an elite athlete, but I'd rather take the time now for my sanity later. So I didn't attempt to start running until 3 months postpartum, which, you know, seemed like a long time for some people, but especially, you know, if you're looking at some of the international athletes overseas, you know, there's a lot of American runners will return, you know, within 2 weeks. And it just seemed crazy to me. You know, I found birth quite traumatic, and, you know, your body just goes through so much. You know, I wanted to be kind and respect that. And, you know, for me, there was no rush to get back to it. So, yeah, didn't start running until 3 months. But before that, I guess I just gradually built my way up from walking to getting on the bike a little bit, doing some postnatal exercise classes, and then slowly starting to do a bit of strength work to get my pelvis strong again. And then from the 3 month mark, I just followed a couch to 5K sort of program. I probably sped it up a tiny little bit, and it felt weird starting from scratch because I haven't really had a significant injury before. So this was the first time that I was really starting from base again. But everything slowly came back pretty quickly. And yeah, I've been really surprised at my pace. You know, they say a pregnancy is kind of like living at altitude for a while, and hopefully that has helped me a little bit. So now I'm sort of back, what are we, 7 months postpartum now, and I'm back training probably 5 or 6 days a week, trying not to run every day. I'll still do a couple of sessions on the bike or do something a bit less impact, primarily to protect my pelvic floor and, you know, and any changes in my pelvis. But yeah, everything's feeling really good. So I think I'm on the right track.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I think the key message there is about respecting your body and respecting what it has been through, and taking the time and don't putting the pressure on yourself. And certainly the type of birth that you have can also impact your recovery, as can the type of baby that you have. And if your baby doesn't want to sleep very much and you're exhausted, then the last thing you probably need is to really pushing yourself. Not saying that physical activity isn't important, it is, but maybe reducing the intensity. So
yeah, I think that's a really good point as well. It's not just about your body and things, but it's about all the logistics that come with being a new mum as well. You know, trying to find time to train and trying to find the motivation, well, not motivation, but, you know, motivation when you're really fatigued.
Yeah.
You know, if you're up feeding during the night, you know, I'm having a lot of trouble getting up early. It's just not possible, as much as I'd love to get it done earlier in the morning. And it's finding a routine with your partner to make it work. So I think we've sort of found something that's kind of working for us at the moment, but you need to continually be flexible with that.
Yeah. I've got two questions. I want to pick up on that a little bit more in just a moment. But during the early phase of post-pregnancy, was there any health professionals that you sought out to help with your returning? You mentioned pelvic floor a couple of times.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess I saw my obstetrician and also I saw a women's health physio. And I would highly recommend that, I mean, all women do that rather than just athletes. But I think it's something that's not, I don't think people are aware so much that that's important. I think going into pregnancy, you should do a lot of research to educate yourself on what the risks are of having a baby, and just, you know, what the outcomes can possibly be from having diastasis recti, you know, the ab separation to pelvic organ prolapse, osteitis pubis. You know, there's so many different things that can happen to your body, so it's important to see a women's health physio to make sure you know what's happened to you and how you can best rehabilitate that and protect yourself in the future.
In terms of the strategies now to logistically train, and you mentioned also working out a routine with your husband, is there anything that you can share with us about what's worked, what hasn't worked, to fit it all in and manage?
Look, I think it helps to have a really supportive partner who sort of gets it as well, and it helps when, you know, he likes to train and things as well, so sort of got to work as a team to make it work for both of us. I think it's any opportunity you can get. So, you know, in the past I would like to train in the morning and get it done for the day so I can chill out. That's not always possible now, so it might be that, you know, I've got a window where he's home in the afternoon, and you just, you know, it might be raining, it might be awful, but you just got to take the opportunities as they come and get out and do something. It's training with the baby where possible, so going hiking, using that, you know, he loves it. He doesn't ever complain if he's in the carrier or in the pram, ever. So it's making the most of that as well. Yeah, I guess from going in the hiking pack or the carrier to then pram running once they're able, that makes things logistically a little bit easier to do some Ks during the day when no one's available to look after the baby.
Can you tell us what sort of carriers and prams you're using?
So at the moment we're using the Ergo Baby carrier. So that can be sort of worn, he can be worn on the front or the back, and he can face in or out. That's one's quite easy for some shorter stuff. But we have been taking out a new hiking pack from Wild Endurance. We were at the Grampians the other week and gave that a go. And that means a baby can sit on your back with a whole heap of other stuff if you need to. You know, we'll probably look at doing an overnighter with that. And he seems comfy in there, and he goes to sleep in there. It's great.
Perfect.
And then from a pram perspective, I guess, you know, there are guidelines that are also written in the postnatal return to running guidelines on what your pram should be like if you want to run with it, mostly based on the baby's health. So making sure that their head and neck control is satisfactory, that they're not going to do damage to themselves, I guess. So that's recommended from not till 6 to 9 months old.
How do you find your running style changes when you're running with the pram?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. Obviously, you got to get used to hanging, you know, holding something in front of you. I think there's been a little bit of research done to look at the different styles of running and what works best. And I think it was a two-hand technique that simulated normal running gait most similarly. But it doesn't feel quite very natural holding onto something with both hands. So I guess it's just figuring out what works best for you. You find that your dominant hand, it can control the pram a lot easier than your non-dominant hand. It takes a bit of practice to get that right.
I know. I did give it a try when I was returning to running, and I found the same. One hand, having the handle a little bit lower down.
Yep.
The pram that I had, I fixed the front wheel just to even stop it from wobbling all over the footpath.
Yeah, then they do recommend fixing that, but we found it really challenging to fix the front wheel because you can't turn. so still figuring that part out. But
and in terms of, I know this might sound like a silly question, but have you had to change your clothing in any way during pregnancy or after pregnancy?
Definitely. I didn't fit in lots of my clothes for a while, and heading into COVID I freaked out a little bit because everything was shutting, so I had to just go and buy a whole heap of things before I actually needed it, in knowing that I would probably grow out of my clothes very quickly. But I think the main thing was just having some support around my belly. So during pregnancy, I had I can't remember what the brand was now, but I wore a belt, a supportive belt that was sort of elasticized and Velcro around my belly when I was running, just to support that a little bit more. And then postpartum, I had a few different compressive pants or shorts, the SRC and an Active Truth. Again, it just gave me a little bit of support as my abs are trying to close again. But I had, interestingly, I have ended up with an umbilical hernia, which is a bit unfortunate, but it hasn't stopped me running at this point. It's more just cosmetic. So, we'll keep my eye on that for now.
Now, you're a successful ultra runner and now also a successful ultra running coach. So what drew you towards coaching?
Yeah, so I guess in most things in my life, I sort of keep striving to, got a drive to go higher or find another way to challenge myself. I became a body pump instructor maybe in my early 20s. And at the time, for me, that was mostly because I went to the gym all the time and I loved doing the classes. And so I needed another challenge, but I also used that as a way to improve my public speaking, because I really was quite afraid of public speaking back then. And, when someone put a microphone on you and made you stand in front of a whole class of people, that really helped for me to step out of my comfort zone. So I guess having that fitness coaching background from that perspective, once I started running and had more experience in that, it was sort of just the next step for me to give back and to use my knowledge and skills to help other people achieve their goals as well. And yeah, having the background in pump was sort of aligned nicely with run coaching.
Yeah. Has your approach to coaching changed over the years?
I don't think it's changed. I think being an occupational therapist, I think that's helped me have a particularly holistic perspective on my clients. It's not just about giving them a run program, it's about looking at their whole life and how that affects and impacts their ability to train and achieve their goals. I think as I have had more experience racing in different terrain and in different countries, that's probably helped me align the specificity for their training for particular events. But yeah, generally, I think I've had the same sort of values that have helped my athletes achieve their goals over time.
Yeah, brilliant. And the coaching opportunity that you have, what does that look like? Do the clients come and do they need to be in the area? Do they run with you, or is it online?
Yep. So at the moment, we have a business called Endurance Edge, and we run programs online, so people can contact me on the website. Yeah, so programs are done using Training Peaks, programmed a week or two in advance, and they're all individualised to a particular person and their lifestyle and what their goals are, what they're racing towards. And then I run a running group once a week as well, and we're based out of Boost Health Collective, a myotherapy clinic in Ringwood and Nunawading, and we do some different quality sessions once a week on a Tuesday night. To help people improve their speed in a safe way, I guess, especially leading into winter now that daylight savings is finished. There's a lot of people that don't feel comfortable training at night time, on their own, and this is a great way to be able to do it with other people.
As a woman, I definitely resonate with that, and love the community feel that you're creating there. So we're coming almost to the end of our chatting time. So I'd like to get some top training tips for our trail listeners. So perhaps if we think about your experience with the trail running, what are your top two training tips to help trail runners improve their performance and or stay injury free?
Yep. So I guess number one tip would be to make sure you have rest days. You know, lots of people start getting into it and don't, they feel guilty for having a rest day, but I think it's really important, and I make sure that all of my athletes have at least one rest day a week, just so that they can consolidate all of the training and all the stress that their body's been through, and they can start the next week fresh again. It's interesting, there's been a lot of the Victorian Ultra Runners, the VUR, on a run streak since COVID started, which is great because it kept them all going, but they've been going for over a year now straight with no breaks, and now there's word of some injuries popping up, and it just really emphasizes you need to have some downtime occasionally.
And just to be absolutely clear, when you say rest, that is an exercise free day?
Correct. Yep. I mean, sometimes maybe doing some yoga or something really light, but exercise free.
So it doesn't mean a light jog.
No,
you're having a day off from running.
That's it.
And what would be your second tip?
And my second tip is to train specifically for the race or the terrain that you're trying to do. So like we were saying before, if you're going into a really hilly race where you know that you're going to have to end up walking, train for that. Get strong hiking. If you're doing a race that's got sand, there's lots of the races down on the Surf Coast now. Train on sand, know how to cope with that. So I think that's really important, rather than just running on the road all the time or running on the trails. Think about the terrain that you're actually going to be doing in a particular race.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us today. I've really enjoyed listening to your story and all of your tips and strategies for our running community.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Trail Podcast with Dr. Andrea Bruder and Dr. Kelly Angel. If you're interested in learning more about Kelly, you can find her on Instagram at KelMO. That's KelEMMO. Alternatively, you can find her on Facebook at Kelly Emerson. Thank you again for listening to another episode of the Trail Podcast.